It's 4 a.m. Central Time Zone. Maybe you're trying to get to sleep, and that's a no-go now because of our music. Well, I'm sorry, not sorry. Sometimes you need a kick in the pants to start a Monday. Well, if that's not good enough, we've got plenty of wild twists and turns and dramatic finishes in not just the NFL, but in baseball from Sunday. Man, it was a doozy. It was typical October in sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, who is the After Hours Monday MVP. Now, generally, our choices in our poll come from the NFL, but we do like using this as a conversation starter. I just know that poor Trevor Lawrence, it was his 25th birthday. He's not been an MVP yet because the Jaguars have been terrible. So that's one reason why he's in the poll. But he also had his best game of the season, including another quarterback, top receiver for the number one overall draft pick, Caleb Williams, who had his best game of his pro career on Sunday. And then the guy that got selected number two, maybe it wasn't his best game, but his team has won four in a row, and we'll get to them before this hour is done. A defensive player is part of the poll as well, at Amy After Hours. And yes, as soon as we get to this break, I know I keep saying it, I'll put it up on our Facebook page named after the show. It's hectic here. It's total chaos behind the scenes, but I kind of like it that way. I feel like we operate pretty well when we're talking about chaos in a white hot spotlight. We rise to the occasion, if you will, on After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If you were excited about Sunday Night Football, well, you wouldn't be alone. It was a game between two of the NFL's most storied franchises. Maybe not now, maybe not in 2024, but there's always the intrigue. There's always the support. You've always got vocal fan bases when it comes to Dallas and Pittsburgh. But you had to wait. This one was delayed 90 minutes by severe weather threat in Pittsburgh and by rain. And so they had to wait until about 9:45 Pittsburgh time kickoff. And you can understand maybe because athletes are so stuck in their routines and their pregame rituals to get ready. This is tough when you have to sit around for an extra 90 minutes, especially when you're playing a night game, right? So these teams are conditioned, especially when we're talking East Coast teams, they're conditioned to play at a certain time on a Sunday afternoon, and they back time everything they've got to do to get ready. So this is already out of their routine because it's a night game, and then they don't kick off until 9:45 local. So it's only 6-3 Dallas at half. Again, you can understand why the two teams would be starting a little slower based on the fact that everything was different and unexpected for Sunday Night Football. The issue is, of course, that the Cowboys keep squandering away opportunities in the red zone. And I can imagine that it's really frustrating for them, for Dak, for Mike McCarthy, for the offense, but also for the fan base because, and I think this is probably typical of a lot of teams right now in the league in these first 5 weeks, maybe even the first 2 months, where you just know there's so much more to offer, but the team still looks sloppy and they look messy and there's penalties. It felt like 4 or 5 false start penalties by the Dallas Cowboys in this one, but also a pair of first half turnovers in the red zone. Dak fumbles after he gets sacked, and then he throws a pick in the first half as well. And so for that reason, it wasn't just the slow start, the delayed kickoff. Nah, this was the Cowboys shooting themselves in the foot and being sloppy for sure. So then finally into the second half they go, and you feel like the two teams maybe are able to put together some semblance of offense.
So pistol formation for Fields on a 2nd and 11. Has Najee Harris behind him, 3 receivers to the left. Fields back to pass. Cowboys rushing 5. Fires. Has Connor Hayward. And Hayward is into the end zone for the touchdown. Takes the ball and flings it up into the stands. And the Steelers, for the first time tonight, have a lead.
2nd and 10. And Prescott back to throw. Has time now. Runs out to his right. Throws it to an open man in the end zone. Dowdle diving to his right. Touchdown, Cowboys!
both the calls there on the Steelers and the Cowboys radio network. And so, yeah, into the third quarter, into the early stages of the fourth quarter, you felt like maybe we're going to see a little more movement from the offenses. Now, sandwiched in between those two touchdowns is another trip into the red zone for the Cowboys in which they have a field goal that gets blocked. So, yeah, three times they go into the red zone before they finally are able to score their TD there with Rico Dowdle. He tumbles over in the corner of the end zone for a 22-yard reception from Dak. But they get fumble, interception, block field goal. All wasted chances and wasted points. After that TD to Rico, they are, and just it should be noted too, that was a 90-yard drive, that went 8.5 minutes. So something that stood out about this game is that they were able to establish the run. And Steelers are no slouch on defense. They're one of the top two defenses in the NFL. And a large part of the reason why is because of T.J. Watt, who had his 100th career sack last night. So that's worth noting as well. Yeah, a bunch of different milestones on Sunday in the NFL. I'll get to the length of the day for the National Football League because that's kind of interesting. But Aaron Rodgers, in the very first game, goes over 60,000 career passing yards. Derrick Henry goes over 10,000 career rushing yards. And then T.J. Watt gets his 100th career sack. So the Steelers defense is terrific. And you got to give them credit for the wasted trips inside the red zone. But what I liked about the Cowboys when they finally settled in, able to establish the run with Rico Dowdle as their primary ball carrier. And that's not something they've done well. They're basement feeders this year in the NFL when it comes to running the football. Not just because of who they've got back there, but in large part because of the offensive line. And so on this particular drive, 8.5 minutes with the football, they give their defense a blow. They go 90 yards, 16 plays, and this looks more like the Cowboys dominating with the football. But they're not done turning it over. They're not done giving extra opportunities to their opponents. Next time they have the football, it's not quite red zone, but I think it should count as a red zone turnover because it was on the 21-yard line. Dak gets picked again by Joey Porter Jr. And yeah, his dad was there in his suite. It was kind of fun to see his dad jumping up and down and screaming for his son. So yeah, you're talking about three turnovers and a blocked field goal for the Cowboys in the red zone. That's the kind of stuff that makes you want to bang your head against the wall. But the Steelers took advantage.
5:05 and counting remaining fourth quarter. Fields in the shotgun. Has Najee Harris to his right, moves him to the left. Now Fields will roll that way. Little quick shovel pass, and Freiermuth is in for the touchdown for the Steelers. 4:56 remaining in the fourth quarter, and the Steelers have taken the lead back.
Once again, on Steelers radio, Justin Fields and the offense did a whole lot of nothing in the first half. But after that Dak pick, you can only gift your opponent so many extra possessions and so many short fields. He's able to connect with Freiermuth. And Justin, apparently fine. He got forced out of the game early in the second half. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever seen a referee walk a player to the tent to get checked out, but it came from on high. It seems like the spotter up in the suite or the press box noticed or what he felt like Justin Fields, the hard hit, needed to get checked out. So he did. But after, I think it was just two snaps with Kyle Allen, although he did complete a 20-yard pass, Justin Fields was back on the field. So they are able to get the lead because of, again, points off turnovers and bad mistakes by the Cowboys deep in the red zone. And so you're talking about them running out of time, needing to once again go the length of the field and try to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. But they did it the same way. It was methodical. It was efficient. They were able to control the ball, again, with Rico Dowdle, using him as their feature back in this one and running the ball more effectively than they have. They get inside the red zone, and it's like they break out in hives or something. I did not know what happens to them inside the red zone, but their first opportunity, I think it was first and goal from the 4. I'll go back and look just to be sure I have the yard line. But they are back inside the red zone, and instead of making it easy on themselves, they get a couple of snaps, one in which Dak Prescott, Thank goodness he didn't fumble. That would have been worse. But Dak Prescott is able to get around the edge, kind of, but gets forced out of bounds. So they have to do a replay on that one. Then they're on the 1 yard line. And after Dak's scramble, he hands off, right? So he hands off to Rico. Rico runs right into a Steelers wall and boom, fumbles it. And in those moments, you can imagine the game was flashing before the eyes of Mike McCarthy, maybe his tenure in Dallas as well. No, that would be dramatic. But Dak is able to fall on that ball. Otherwise, they have 4 turnovers and a blocked field goal in this game against Pittsburgh. So, yeah, they use every last snap. They pretty much use every last second, and it comes down to their last shot at the end zone.
For the ball game, 4th and goal. Prescott in the gun, snap is back. He has some time. He throws it in the end zone. It's a touchdown to Jalen Tolbert on the left side of the end zone, crossing in front of Deshaun Elliott with 20 seconds to play. Goodness gracious me.
The play we ran is one of our most comfortable plays. That and honestly the play before that, you know, throwing it to Tolbert low, it's a miss on my part. Was halfway in between running it up the middle and throwing it, trying to throw it low between, before the safety came back, and just wanted one more op at it. And luckily we had the 4th down, and it was special to get it back to Tolbert. He did a great job of coming across the field, getting open. Offensive line did a great job on that play, allowing me to stay in the pocket. And as you said, just the persistence and resilience of the team just really showed in there, showed in that drive.
So Dak kind of goes over that final sequence other than the fumble, but with 30 seconds to go, he tries to get it to Tolbert. It doesn't work. It was low. And so that's their 3rd and 4 at the 4-yard line. And then it's the 4th down after a couple of timeouts. He goes right back to Tolbert, who catches it with 20 seconds to go. Brad Sham with the call on Cowboys radio. Now, apparently, Tolbert paid for his game-winning touchdown catch.
It was a low ball. I thought I could get underneath it and ended up taking a one hopper, you know, to the private. But I couldn't breathe for a second. But once they called the timeout, I knew I had to go back in the game. My team needed me. That's the moments that I work hard for. I wasn't going to be out in that moment. So no matter what, I was going on the field. And like I said, I knew the play call. I knew the options that were available on the play call. I knew the coverage they would run. All I had to do was get through clean and make a play. And like I say, that's what big-time players do in big-time moments. When the ball comes your way, your team's counting on you. You make plays.
So on that 3rd down pass, the one that hops in front of him, it smacks him in the little Cowboys. And so at that point, he's got to get his breath back. He's got to kind of regain his ability to stand up straight. And he tells the Cowboys post-game show that it took his breath away. But once there were the timeouts, those were his saving grace. So yes, then when Dak Prescott goes right back to him, that's a little bit of redemption for him, but also a touchdown for his trouble. So the Cowboys end up winning, move to 3-2, and no joke, if you saw the celebration, and this happened at 1 a.m. Pittsburgh time, midnight Cowboys time, if you saw the celebration by Mike McCarthy and his coaches, you would have thought this was a much bigger game than early in October. But they snatched this victory away from the Steelers and that Steelers defense despite a myriad of mistakes.
I thought he played very well. Again, he kept us, you know, in the game. We were extremely productive against a really good defense. You know, we moved up and down the field. We got to score points in the red zone. And most importantly, we got to get rid of these penalties. You know, these not only the number, but the critical penalties on, you know, 3rd down in red zone. That's been our challenge all year, and it was a little bit of a challenge tonight, but that's a hell of a team win for us.
11 penalties for the Cowboys, and yeah, the number of times that they were flagged for their own pre-snap penalties, it's got to be infuriating. So you look at the stats, and you see the 445 yards, you see 10 of 16 on 3rd and 4th down, you see that they're overwhelmingly in favor of the Cowboys in terms of the offense, except for the fact that they were one of four in the red zone and they have 3 turnovers. And so that's obviously how the Cowboys nearly lost this game on a Sunday night. Surely frustrating for the Steelers too, though, because they can look at it from the other side and realize that they had just as many opportunities and didn't take advantage.
there's a fine line between drinking wine and squashing grapes in our business, and you know, that's an example of it. You know, that ball's on the ground right there in the red area, and that's the difference.
So Mike Tomlin pointing to that fumble by Rico Dowdle that was recovered by Dak, and it's that close, it's that tight. And what does he say? I did put this out there at A-Law Radio. There's a fine line between drinking wine and squashing grapes in our business.
There's a fine line between drinking wine and squashing grapes in our business.
We have to add that to our Mike Tomlin library because we've got an entire catalog of just Tomlin. And if you don't know that it's Mike Tomlin, if I don't tell you, like I did on Facebook, you're probably going to figure it out anyway. Tomlin's a big fan of Dak Prescott. We know that. But certainly, this is a painful way for the Steelers to fall to 3-2.
Compliment our guys on their efforts. It was a hard-fought game tonight. But it's nothing mystical about the outcome. I just thought we didn't do enough over 60 minutes to position ourselves specifically. I thought we started slow offensively, and I thought it was self-inflicted wounds. Penalties and things of that nature to get us off schedule. I didn't think we were as connected as we should have been defensively in some moments in the first half. Didn't necessarily manifest itself in the terms of points, but it was some field positional flipping like chunks and things of that nature. I thought we settled down and cleaned some of that up over the second half.
Yeah, just coming up a little bit short with that Dak Prescott touchdown pass, 20 seconds to go, and not able to take advantage of all of the mistakes by the Cowboys. That's another area where you would expect that they could have, because the Cowboys' defense was missing two major pieces, including Micah Parsons. But I was impressed with the way the Cowboys ran the ball and stood up to that Steelers offense. George Pickens did not have a great game. They were able to hold the Steelers at bay. Just the turnovers and the penalties. Again, they make you want to stick a fork in your eye sometimes if you're a fan of the Cowboys. At A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Now, we're talking about the NFC East, of course. The Giants get a victory on the road at the Seahawks on Sunday, despite the very first drive ending in a 101-yard fumble return for a touchdown for Seattle. That was quite a way to come out of the gate. But the Giants do get a victory, so they're 2-3. Eagles are off this weekend. They're 2-2. Cowboys move to 3-2, but they're all looking up at the Commanders, and we'll get to Commanders and Cleveland, or Commanders Browns, coming up next. This wasn't the same dazzling game for Jaden Daniels, but the fact that they've won 4 in a row is really impressive, and he's so much fun to watch. So we'll get to that one as well. And we've got some baseball on the back of the hour because yet another dramatic finish between the Phillies and Mets meeting in the postseason for the first time, and the Padres making a very loud statement in LA and winning game 2. Good morning to you. It's Monday, October 7th. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Second goal at the one. Daniels has Robinson to his left. Gives it to him again. Right in the middle. His second touchdown of the half. Touchdown. Touchdown, Washington. A-Rob does it again.
Wanda. Running inside tight zone. It doesn't get much better than that.
Second and 7 at the 41-yard line. Two wide receivers to the right and 3 to the left. McCaffrey and Ertz next to each other inside the numbers. McCaffrey chip blocks. Jade loads one up towards the Army run. He's got him. Touchdown. Again! Daniels to Brown on a bomb!
It was just a matter of time when Jaden Daniels was going to come up with a big shot down the field. Excellent pass protection. Using Luke McCaffrey as a chip block on Miles Garrett gave Jaden Daniels just enough time. And De'Ami Brown had 2 yards on Emerson.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
The Commanders are rolling and taking on the Browns in D.C. This one turns into quite a blowout for Washington. Now, they do have an early turnover. Jaden Daniels throws an interception. But Cleveland offense struggled mightily in this one. And I know it's not all on Deshaun Watson. It's never that simple. Never that one-dimensional. But the Browns were 0-for-8 on third down. And there were some moments that I know a lot of Browns fans are looking at on this Monday, thinking that Deshaun Watson is no longer a team guy, not wanting to go for it on fourth down at one point in this game, actually refusing his coach. At least that's what it looked like on TV. His coach is disappointed because he wants the team to go for it on fourth down. But instead, Deshaun Watson, he walks to the sidelines and off the field. And so there's a lot of dysfunction going on with Deshaun Watson. And I know I got a ton of reaction on Sunday when I pointed out that this is a fully guaranteed contract worth a whopping $230 million. And there are a lot of Browns fans, and I mean a lot of Browns fans, who are responding now and are ready to throw in the towel on Deshaun Watson. Again, it's not all on him. Nick Chubb probably could provide a boost. The issue, of course, is that the offensive line is tough. But it does beg the question, if you aren't spending so much fully guaranteed money on your quarterback, then could you potentially be spending money in other areas? I suppose the going rate now for QBs is more than what the Browns are paying Deshaun Watson. The issue is that they can't get out of it and save themselves in any way. The cap hit, the money that they're committed to for these next couple of years, it was not a smart contract when they gave it to him because there was so much unknown about Deshaun after nearly 2 years on the sidelines. They also knew he was going to have to serve a lengthy suspension, which he did, 11 games. And then there have been injuries, and now it's a disaster. I mean, they got over 100 yards rushing, but Deshaun's not supposed to be their top rusher. He's not supposed to be carrying the ball that much. And furthermore, it almost looks like he's lost his nerve or is just tired of getting hit. So in the first half, the Browns go 0-for-8 on third down. They manage just 67 total yards. Meanwhile, Washington is scoring left and right. Four of their five possessions, their last five possessions in the first half. I mean, that should tell you something, how many times they had the ball in the first half. They get a pair of Brian Robinson touchdowns, and they already have over 125 rushing yards as a team before the break. And so they're winning this one going away. And I do appreciate that they pulled Jaden Daniels in the second half because they didn't want anything to happen to their rookie QB. His completion percentage, not quite as high. He goes 14 of 25. He does have the interception, but he's also their leading rusher with 82 yards. So you want to be careful about that. It's just they have a lot of options now. And you can understand with his explosiveness, his athleticism, the way that he manages the game. All of these are such bright lights now for a team that's waited so long for a new franchise quarterback. The calls there on the Commanders Radio Network. And how about this? I'm just giving you the numbers. Washington rushes for 215 yards. That's more than the Browns have as an entire offense. I mean, there's something so completely wrong about that. Cleveland punts seven times, has a fumble, goes 1-for-13 on third down, seven sacks. And so again, pointing to the fact that Deshaun is getting hit a ton and doesn't really want to get hit anymore. He said that a couple of weeks ago. The offensive line is not protecting him. Do you really want to throw Nick Chubb out there behind a line like that? Though you would think that that could help. So this is, it's a mess. And now the Commanders, while they sit at 4-1, and we'll talk about them in a second, the Browns are at 1-4.
I mean, you just got to believe. You got to keep that faith. You got to believe. And each week is just another opportunity. You never know what's going to happen. So that's all we can do is just keep believing, keep just putting in the work and trying to find ways to get better.
Expectations don't change. You know, just got to go get it, get out the mud now. You know, we're not starting like we wanted to, but you know, we can still end up where we hope to if we don't get it all together.
That's true. I appreciate what Myles Garrett had to say, and he's playing hurt. So we know that if he's out there, he's believing it. Well, it's got to be true, right? Because that's the leader. He's the guy that sets the tone. They will follow his lead. And so it's true that at 1-4, they're not out of it. There's a lot of real estate left in the season. It's just that the AFC is so tough. And the question is, what do you do at quarterback? Kevin Stefanski was asked that question multiple times after the game. And his response is, Deshaun Watson is our quarterback. Deshaun Watson is our quarterback. And so seemingly at this point, that ends the discussion for now. As for Jaden Daniels, I mean, you're talking about two opposite ends of the spectrum. Browns, they've got a quarterback conundrum. The Commanders, they feel like they've hit the lottery, finally. And yeah, to see Jaden Daniels operate 5 weeks in, he seems a lot like, say, a C.J. Stroud in the way C.J. developed last season.
You know, you've got to stay back in coverage because now there's certainly a dual threat. So I just love the way that he's growing. He really puts the work in. That's why so many of the teammates, you know, have such high regard for him.
It gave us the opportunities to, even when we weren't clicking at first, to get back on the field and get into a groove, get into a rhythm. So without them, we wouldn't have been in this position today.
How about that? Jaden Daniels pointing to his defense as the reason why they won this game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. While we're talking about the number two overall pick, the quarterback Jaden Daniels with the Commanders and how giddy they are, not only sitting on top of their division with 4 wins in a row, but he is really coming along quickly. And it's funny, too, a lot of guys, this would go straight to their head. A lot of athletes, all the attention, all the the superlatives would go straight to their heads, but not him. I mean, he kind of points back to people and says, like, you may call me what's his superhero? Shoot, what is it that they're calling him? Why I'm missing it right now. But Jaden Daniels has been tabbed. I think it's a superhero. Anyway, he's been tabbed with a particular nickname. Meanwhile, he's just doing his thing. He said, I am still a rookie. And so that I appreciate about him. But while we're talking about rookie QBs, he was selected number two overall. Caleb Williams, we saw the best of him on Sunday. And I don't care who it's against. I don't care if it's the Panthers defense. That line of thinking, that logic does not fly with me. You, as a rookie quarterback, you're seeing everything that's all new. But he had 4 possessions in the first half in which he led the Bears on touchdown drives and a couple of long connections with DJ Moore. DeAndre Swift has another huge game as well. I mean, I really like what we're seeing from this guy. Maybe it didn't slot in as quickly as what people were expecting, but come on, we're only 5 games in, and this was the best he's played.
Safeties are back deep. Snap to Caleb Williams. Good protection. Lines it up for DJ Moore to the end zone. Perfect throw. Perfect catch. Touchdown, Bears. There you go. Deep strike and a 30-yard touchdown. 27-7, Bears. Second connection of the day with DJ Moore, and the Bears are pulling away from the Panthers.
Jeff Joniak on Bears Radio. So, yeah, they're back above 500. And, again, a banner day for the offense. In fact, DJ Moore is one of our choices for Monday MVP at Amy After Hours. That's the second one that he connects with. Caleb Williams earlier was 34 yards. And so you get a really efficient performance from Caleb. 304 yards, 20 of 29, a couple of touchdowns. But overall, the team is 3 of 4 in the red zone. DeAndre Swift gets 120. I mean, I don't care who it's against. It's another NFL defense, and this is what the Bears need from their rookie QB, and this is what they want to see. They know he's working hard. They know he handles his business like a pro, but this is what they need to see from him. Smart decisions, and of course, a rhythm with the guys who are around him, being able to distribute the football, make the right choices, even if it's the check down, not put himself in situations where it's way too risky and he could get hurt or somebody else could get hurt. So, yeah, good step forward for both of these rookie QBs, number one, number two, and both have got their teams above 500. We have one team that moved to 5-0. That was the first game on Sunday morning, so we'll get to that one coming out of the break and then also tack on some baseball at the back end because it was the first Sunday in October and it was crazy. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
We lead off with Major League Baseball's postseason.
Payoff pitch and Bogart swings, sends one in the air to deep left field. He might have just hit another. Hernandez is back at the wall. This one is going to go. Xander Bogaerts, bad leg and all. It's the fourth of the night for the Padres. They go back-to-back in the eighth, and it's 7-1.
Jesse Agler on Padres Radio. The Padres beat the Dodgers 10-2. The series tied at a game apiece. Fernando Tatis Jr. with 2 of the Padres' 6 home runs. Yu Darvish allowed a run and 3 hits over 7 innings. Game 3 Tuesday in San Diego. In Philadelphia, Nick Castellanos delivered a walk-off RBI single in the bottom of the ninth to give the Phillies a 7-6 win over the Mets. That series tied at a game apiece. Game 3 Tuesday in New York. Now to Sunday Night Football. The Steelers were leading the Cowboys 17-13 late in the fourth quarter.
For the ball game, fourth and goal. Prescott in the gun, snap is back. He has some time. He throws it in the end zone. It's a touchdown to Jalen Tolbert on the left side of the end zone, crossing in front of Deshaun Elliott with 20 seconds to play. Goodness gracious me.
Brad Cham on Cowboys Radio. The Cowboys beat the Steelers 20-17. Elsewhere on the scoreboard, the Giants over the Seahawks 29-20. The Packers beat the Rams 24-19. Cardinals 24, Niners 23. Broncos over the Raiders 34-18. Commanders 34, Browns 13. Dolphins over the Patriots 15-10. Jaguars 37, Colts 34. The Texans over the Bills 23-20. In overtime, the Ravens beat the Bengals 41-38. Bears 36, Panthers 10. And in London, the Vikings over the Jets 23-17. WNBA semifinals, game 4, the Sun over the Lynx 92-82. That series tied at 2. Liberty over the Aces 76-62. New York wins the series 3-1. They're going back to the finals. I'm Peter Schwartz.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Infinity Sports Network. That's Infinity Sports Network to follow us on Instagram.
Stomps his right foot, barks out a signal, nobody jumps. And now pressure coming up the snap, thrown to the right side, intercepted! Going back the other way at the 40, to the 50, outside left numbers to the 40. And this is Van Ginkle down the sideline to the 20, to the 10, he's all the way in! Touchdown, Minnesota! Andrew Van Ginkle! His second pick six of the season! And the Vikings have a two-score lead late in the first quarter.
Aaron Rodgers in the gun. Two receivers left. Single man. Make it two receivers right. And the shotgun snap. Number high. Rodgers lets it fly down the right boundary. One-on-one coverage. It's intercepted. Inside the 10. The Vikings take it away. Stephon Gilmore on his backside made the catch. Interception from Minnesota.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
It was much to the chagrin and the shock and awe of Aaron Rodgers. It was a tough day for Aaron, but I got to say, the Stephon Gilmore story took a drastic turn. His game cap looks completely different after he seals the Vikings' victory with that interception, because on the previous drive for the Jets, he gets called for a defensive pass interference in the end zone he's matched up against Garrett Wilson, their great receiver. And as he gets called for the DPI, of course, the Jets get a fresh set of downs and they're able to get into the end zone. So yeah, for Gilmore, who was frustrated by getting that PI call, then he turns around and he picks off Aaron Rodgers, someone with whom he is very familiar, does that in London and seals the Vikings 5-0 start. How about that? First of 3 straight weeks in London. So this is worth noting. These are the kind of nerdy things that I think are like sugar sprinkled on our show. Or if you like whipped cream, the whipped cream on our show, the cherry on top, whatever it happens to be. Sunday was the longest day of NFL action since at least the merger. Okay, so that goes back to pre-1970. Maybe they weren't keeping track then, but they certainly weren't sending teams to London before the merger. 15 hours, 27 minutes of NFL action on Sunday.
That was just a jet game.
Oh, heavens to Betsy. That is one reason why I am getting old much faster than just my birthdays would indicate. The London game kicked off at 9:32 a.m. Eastern time, so 6:32 Pacific time. Sunday Night Football ended at 12:59 a.m. in Pittsburgh on Monday morning. Right, so it was an hour before we went on the air. So 15 hours, 27 minutes, longest day of NFL action since they've been keeping track. All right, back to Aaron Rodgers. It was a tough day for him. He's got some gray hair. He throws a lot of passes. This is not optimal. 29 of 54, and he only manages 244 yards. It's not just him. They hit some drops. But the interceptions, though, back-to-back in the first half, Andrew Van Ginkel, he goes 63 yards with a pick six, and the call's there with J.P. Shadrick on Westwood One. There's also a scary moment for him when his knee is bent underneath a defender in the third quarter, and he's out for, I don't know, maybe two snaps or so. So just was a mess there in London. And here are the Jets kind of backpedaling in this one. Just way too many mistakes for them.
Obviously, that was below my standard. I just found out I've never thrown two picks in the first quarter before. So that's a first. One of us cost, obviously, seven, and the other, you know, could cost three. So in a game where you lose by six, you know, plays like that are exponentially highlighted. So three turnovers for me is definitely out of character, and I'm disappointed.
It's weird sound. I blame London. Three turnovers for him, and he said it's uncharacteristic. And game they lose by six is just mistakes that they can't really make, can't really afford to, especially not against the Vikings, who had their own share of turnovers. In fact, there were five of them in London, so you're welcome. Across the pond, we send our best teams. The Vikings are 5-0 now, and Kevin O'Connell will take it and get the heck back across the Atlantic.
So many moments in that game, so many things we talked about going into this football game that materialized, especially got to give it up for our defense, Flo and those guys. We needed them today.
First team to get to 5-0. Sam Darnold said they stuck with the game plan. And yeah, they raced out to a 17-0 lead early. Just kind of hanging on for dear life at the end. And I'm sure this puts them all these teams kind of out of sorts. The Stephon Gilmore pick off Aaron Rodgers, I mean, that was another one of those moments where you kind of think about the Jets. I mean, they sold out to get everything in place for Aaron Rodgers, like everything in place. And I know it takes time. They didn't play together last year. Just in the AFC, how much time can you take? And that's the question for teams like the Bengals, who are now 1-4. I mean, we just talked about the Browns, also 1-4. In the Jets and the Dolphins, who don't have either of their top two quarterbacks, now have the same record, right? So, I mean, there are a couple of really impressive teams in the AFC. Baltimore's looking better at 3-2. The Texans are 4-1. And if the Chiefs lose on Monday night, it's Texans and Chiefs that have the best records in the conference, which, by the way, same record as the Commanders. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Really quick, I want to get to a couple of your baseball highlights that you'll be seeing today or people will be talking about today. The Mets, because they've got the playoff pumpkin, at least that's my theory, they're able to come back and tie the Phillies again in the ninth inning with a Mark Vientos two-run home run. So that's the top of the ninth inning. They're tied at six. Edwin Diaz already been burned by the Mets, so he was there, what, end of seventh into the eighth inning. In fact, gives up a huge Bryson Stott go-ahead two-run triple. Just a lot of pitches that he's thrown lately. Happy birthday to Bryson Stott. So we head to the bottom of the ninth, where right away the Mets are able to get two outs. But then there's a walk of Trey Turner. And then they don't really want to pitch to Bryce Harper, who had the home run earlier in the game and actually barely missed a walk-off hit by inches. It went foul up the right field line. So that brings up the man of the moment, I would say, for this game. But how often have we seen Nick Castellanos come through in huge situations?
McGill had one ball, two strikes. Looks back at second. The pitch. Swung on, line down the left field line, and that's going to win it. Castellanos has done it. Turner is scoring, and the Phillies walk it off here in the bottom of the ninth. A game two victory, 7-6, as the Phillies come racing out of the dugout, dancing around between first and second as Nick Castellanos has won the ball game.
The series is far from over. They're a really good team over there, and they are playing together. They're playing as a unit. And they've been through adversity before, so, you know, game 3 and 4 in New York is going to be challenging, but I know all of us are looking forward to it.
Castellanos goes 3-for-5. He had a home run as well. back-to-back with Harper in what was the sixth inning, and has a couple of RBI, a couple of runs scored, and he was fired up on the field. But by the time they get to the post-game press conference, he is even keel again. I had forgotten about this, Pete, but maybe you remember back when the Phillies were in the World Series a couple years ago, and he had some really big hits. They hit some big moments. He, of course, shares all of those with his son, Liam, who sits in the same place there in their stadium in Citizens Bank Park. And so it was sweet, again, to see him go right over to his son as soon as the walk-off hit was recorded.
Well, that's what it's all about. But our fandoms aside, it's about family and about your sons and daughters and whatnot and celebrating any success with them.
Yeah, being able to do that. And that actually reminds me. So Matt LaFleur and Sean Payton worked together, obviously, for years. Well, there was this video that was out on social late last night where Matt got to meet Sean's first child, right? His newborn son, not newborn anymore, but young son. And so that was kind of neat pregame. As you say, you put aside some of the unpleasantries from on the field. You remember what matters most, which is friends, family, relationships, that kind of thing. So yeah, the Phillies walk off. That series is tied one game apiece, and it's been insane. I mean, the Mets, they're indefatigable. I use that on Twix, and a few of you told me you're going to try to work that into conversation today, which makes me happy. It was not that close in Los Angeles, where the Padres pounded Dodgers pitching.
First pitch on the way. Fernando swings, sends it in the air to deep right center field. Edmund is back. This time all he can do is watch. It's going to go. Another home run. Padres with their sixth home run of the night. Fernando with his second. It is 10-1 at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, yeah. This was just a barrage of big hits by the Padres. They end up with six of them, most that the Dodgers have ever given up in a playoff game, and ties a franchise record for San Diego. Fernando Tatis is on fire right now. 3-for-4, 3 RBI, a couple of home run. What you may see, and I dare say news networks will pick this up, Jurickson Profar, who had robbed, I forgot who it was. Who did he rob in the first inning of a home run? Was it Freeman?
Mookie Betts.
Oh, it was Mookie. That's right. It was Mookie. So he robs Mookie Betts of a home run, and he's hearing it from fans. Well, fans have decided that once the game is out of reach for the Dodgers, they're going to chuck not just baseballs at him, but trash gets chucked on the field. Game gets stopped for about 12 minutes. These two teams going back and forth from dugout to dugout. Jack Flaherty is giving crap to some of the guys who are jawing at him when he's on the mound. If you missed my conversation with Michael Duarte, he joined us at midnight LA time. He had gone to the stadium and gone to the game and then post-game press conferences. Great insight about this rivalry and also what was happening there on the field between Padres and Dodgers. But like Phillies and Mets, this intra-divisional matchup is tied at one game apiece, but the NL will take off Monday, play again on Tuesday. It's back to the American League today, plus Monday Night Football as the Chiefs try to go to 5-0, and you know we'll be back same place tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Boom!